I like the outskirts, the high desert towns.
All right, welcome back, songwriters and listeners, to We Write Songs Podcast. Today we've got a special guest, Bradley Palermo. It's actually our second time interviewing him.
Hey,
how you doing, Bradley?
Good. How you guys doing?
We're doing good.
We're good.
So how are things going? How was the tour in was Oklahoma City that you were at? Kind of that
yeah,
area?
I think last time I talked to you guys, I was just doing like a little weekend thing. Oklahoma City, Denton, Texas, and Austin. And that was a lot of fun. Denton was probably maybe my favorite show of the three. You never know, like what it depends on the night of the week or whatever, but that one worked out pretty well. And it was kind of cold, so it's good to be back in LA, you know?
Mm-hmm. The warm sunshine.
Yeah.
Southern California.
Yeah.
So how have you done any other tours since then, or did you just go home and hang out in the heat?
Yeah. I didn't do too many tours since then. I played a show the other night in Los Angeles with David Don Darrow, who's a folk artist that I've been a fan of for a long time. So that was really cool. Mm-hmm. And then I'm preparing to release a record in a couple months. So it's been a lot of just prep for that, like, you know, dealing with the manufacturers and the promotion side of things. And I go to Europe next month, and then I do like a West Coast thing after that. So I guess things are about to get busy, you know?
Yeah, especially with that release of the album. That'll definitely bring some busyness to your schedule, I bet.
Yeah, things will kind of ramp up.
Bradley, you're kind of like a guy that knows what he's doing as far as tour scheduling going. So for the audience that may like have some music out there, they want to start booking some tours and some gigs, what's maybe a little process of a breakdown to start booking tours that you could give advice on?
Yeah, I think as far as booking goes, especially in the beginning, it's probably best to work with or talk with the artists that you're already playing with. So chances are if you're, you know, you're trying to get over to the next state or somewhere else in the region, the bands that you're currently playing with probably go there, or at least some of them do. I just find that booking is much easier when you're contacting promoters and clubs that have mutual friends. That sort of gets you in the door. I use websites like indieonthemove.com, I believe. It's like a small monthly fee with all the club and promoter contacts from all levels. But you know, when you're cold calling people based on like a internet database, it's not quite as easy as just going with the friends of your friends. So I think that's the place to start, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Well, Mitch did, didn't you do, was it Solar? No.
Oh, the summer sales?
Yeah.
Garbage?
And I remember they would always say like,
Southern California.
Hey, I was just with your friend so-and-so, and, you know, we thought it might be something you'd be interested in, and that opened the conversation to be like, oh, well, if my friend likes them, then I should, too.
Those are cheap sales tactics right there.
Right, but that's
but you actually know.
But with music, it's actually effective, I feel like.
I think that's how, I think like booking emails should be kind of short and sweet. Like, you should say, you know, hi, I'm Brad. We have a mutual friend, you know, X, Y, and Z, or just the one person that you got the contact from. And mm-hmm. then say your genre, the dates you're looking for. Do you have that date available? Links and info below. And then that's it. Like, you got your Facebook, your Bandcamp, whatever, just listed mm-hmm. as links at the bottom. Because I think if you write them like a novel about how awesome you are, they're just going to be like, what even is this? You know, they're going to close it out. But
yeah,
all they
it's
really
like fine
need
tuning
to know,
your resume.
Yeah. I mean, all they really need to know is that, you know, you've got the same buddy and that you want the date that you want. I think if that doesn't work, I don't know what else will. At least, you know, at the DIY level, you know.
Yeah. And a lot of it probably depends on the experience they had with your friend too, you know?
Oh yeah. Obviously if it didn't go well, then
yeah.
Then maybe don't mention the friend.
Right.
Yeah. Or don't even bother contacting them.
Exactly.
I remember you talking about that. That's how you got in with those places you played at on that tour over in the Midwest area.
Yeah, I think that's how it all comes together. Old contacts, new contacts, friends of friends. Like, a lot of times if I'm trying to book a region and there's spots that I'm not sure, like if there's other cities in that area that I need to play or it's just completely new, I'll just look at the other artists that are kind of my same level or a little bit bigger and look at their old tour posters or old rosters and be like, like, do any of these places, should I be hitting up these places? And if I have questions, I'll just ask them, you know. But it's a big world, but I still think when you narrow it down to the people who do this and travel and play these bars and pubs, like it becomes like kind of a small town. Like everybody kind of knows each other one way or another.
Yeah, for sure. That, and if you've seen that work, that'll definitely help, you know, future listeners out there that are looking into doing the same thing. I think that's a really good place to start and a good place to pursue a career, I would say.
Yeah.
So Bradley, when you go on tour, are you mostly playing your own music, originals?
Yeah, I do almost exclusively originals. I think sometimes I'll do like a cover, maybe one. I have a Pet Shop Boys cover that I do on the ukulele for the song It's a Sin, which it's not like maybe not too widely known, at least in the like sort of scenes, for lack of a better word, that I play within. But usually a couple people know that song. It's on a different instrument because I'm normally playing guitar. I bust out the ukulele. I'm like, if anybody knows what this song is, you can buy me a drink or whatever. Make some silly joke. And it kind of breaks things up. But I know you could definitely book really cool cover gigs as a way to make probably more serious money on tour. But I don't really have like a cover set that I really work with, you know.
Yeah, and I think the danger too with doing like a cover set is that people like aren't gonna look you up on Spotify or iTunes and go listen to your music if you're just playing other people's music too.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think cover sets, it's for that moment, that song they know. It's not for like building sort of a brand or getting people like, you know, hooked in to you and your next record and your, like you said, your follows on Spotify and all that stuff.
Yeah,
it's a little different, but I do think that there is a way to do both. I think I can't remember where I saw it, probably on like one of the CD Baby blogs or something, but it, you know, they were talking about how a lot of musicians are willing to do really horrible jobs rather than do cover sets, which is silly because a lot of times at home, like you could go do some cover sets instead of digging that ditch. You know, it might be more fun for you. It might be better to like hone the craft. So, I mean, even though I don't do it, I do think I don't think it's like all or nothing. I think it's cool if people are supplementing their sort of like income with paying cover gigs. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I went to see Panic at the Disco like a year or two ago, and they did a cover of Queen, Bohemian Rhapsody, and it was like awesome, and it got the crowd really pumped up and fired up because everybody knew that song. I mean, most people know Panic at the Disco at this point anyway songs, so they sing along to that too. But it is fun to throw some covers in and a way to get your crowd and your audience involved. But I think it's also important to share your own music so people know what to expect from you as an artist.
Yeah.
I think so. I think like with an original set, the cover song is to like, it's for like a surprise or to sort of just refresh the moment, like, okay, you guys have been watching us do our songs. Let's do something maybe not quite expected. Like I've seen a lot of bigger artists do that at the end. I don't know. And even like, I think it's probably like an important part of just an original act set is to have that cover song you can pull out if you need to.
Yeah.
But I think when you do two, it changes it. Now it's like, wait, they're going to like a cover set or three or like a 50-50. Now you're a cover band. You know, I don't know. I guess there's no rules, but that's what it seems like to me.
I think as like a singer-songwriter and, you know, trying to promote your own brand, I think the occasional cover song is good to show like your versatility and also your take on a classic song or someone else's song. Anyways, that's what I'm trying to get across is like, as I think a lot of these big time artists will pull out a cover because they've kind of established their sound. They have whatever it is they're known for, and then they implement that into a cover, and then the crowd goes wild because they're already a fan of whoever it is. And they're just, you know, Bohemian Rhapsody, for example, is such a well-known song. It's like,
yeah.
Oh, sweet. They just, you know, Panic at the Disco just did that. Awesome.
Some bands break through, I guess, with a cover. I mean, I think I remember like, you know, Marilyn Manson back in the day came out with Sweet Dreams cover song. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, that definitely did not sound like the original. And, you know, no one thinks of him as like a cover guy. But I mean, I think he had another hit that was, maybe did a Depeche Mode cover or something. I don't know. But probably got by for a lot of his career on other people's music. Mm-hmm. I guess Elvis never wrote a song. So it's
yeah, it's true.
Yeah. There you go.
And Justin Bieber got famous off doing YouTube covers, didn't he?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just know he got famous off YouTube. I don't know, I guess, if it's covers or not. Well, anyways, cool. That's fun topic to talk about, covers. Yeah,
for sure.
Let's get back to what you're doing for your brand right now.
Sure. Yeah.
So you're working on an album.
Yeah.
And I remember you talking about it a little bit. One of the songs on there is Tombstone, which we're going to be using for the intro and outro on this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And tell us a little bit about that song.
Yeah, that song, it's mostly about sort of me reflecting on my time, my downtime where I wasn't focusing on my purpose or art as much as I maybe should have been. I've been playing music, you know, since I was a teenager most of my life, but there was a few years there where I was kind of doing the corporate job thing and I couldn't really leave and tour and I wasn't releasing records and kind of hit my breaking point and was just like, this is what I need to do. It doesn't matter how old I'm getting or what excuses I have. Like, I want to be me and go out and hit the road. And I guess Tombstones is kind of just like my message to myself, like, this life isn't going to last forever, so go have a little bit of fun. And it's the first song on the record, which is gonna just be called Volume One because it's a collection of singles that I've released over the past couple years. But it'll be the first single. It's the first song on the record, and we're doing a video for it later this month. So I'm excited about that song and the rest of it too. Yeah, be cool.
Yeah, we'll check that out. It'll be on YouTube.
Yeah,
your video.
It'll be up wherever I can upload the videos. It'll be definitely be on YouTube for sure. And cool. Also, I think the version of the song that I sent you was like the original like single version, but I have the album version now.
Okay.
Mastered, so I could swap that out because, I mean, it's not totally totally different, but I did go back in and re-record a lot of stuff on this record, so. It's different takes and such. So I'll send that to you as well.
Yeah, if you want to do that, that'd be great. We'll get that
for sure.
Put that in the episode.
Cool.
So as far as like the production goes, what are some things that you found difficult in the production of your album? Because I know you do a little bit of it yourself, right? or most of it, I should say.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, I record pretty much mostly on my own. I have like the pedal steel. There's a guy, Reggie Duncan, who does that down in I don't even know where he is. Mississippi somewhere.
Okay.
Cool. But yeah, there's certain instruments where people record at home and send it out to me or in their studios, but most of it's all me. Mm-hmm. But I never intended on being sort of like a DIY recording guy. But for years I played in this electronic band, and you just end up with so much recording software and synthesizers, and then you start EQing stuff. And I don't know, by the time I ended up with folk, I was already like, I can do this, you know, and maybe it doesn't sound like the most pristine studio, but I think it sounds like the way that I want it to sound. I kind of like a little bit of edge to it. So, I mean, it's kind of a pain in the ass really to record. I drive myself crazy with it. But I have more of a method, I think, now than before I started this record. Before I would do a take and then I'd be like, I don't really like it, but I'll edit it over and over. I'll make it sound good. Now I don't do that. Every take I do it four times, any instrument, any vocal. I kind of have like a method to where no matter what happens, I have so many takes that I can fix things and such, you know?
Do you ever feel like you're your own worst judge though? Like you're almost more critical when you record your own music, 'cause you know,
yeah,
how to make it exactly perfect. I don't know. I just have a harder time when I record my own music and it's just never good enough.
No, I totally agree. I think I read Amanda Palmer's book and she talks about like the fraud police, I think is what she calls it, but it's just like in your head, like you're a fraud, like you don't know what you're doing, like you know, and it's I definitely have that. I mean, when I had to send off my record to be mastered, you know, like that was it. It was leaving my hands. I mean, I'm having nightmares. I'm like waking up in the middle of the night about like, that vocal's too loud. I'll go in there and listen. I'm like, it's not too loud. It is too loud. And then you'll turn it down and you'll go in your car and I can't even hear it anymore. Like it starts to really melt down. And I would say like, it's not even just the music. It's like when I did the art, like I sent the record pressing plant, you know, Bradley Palermo volume one, art layout final one, and then final two. And then by the end of the night, it was at final 11. When they got it in the morning, they're like, do you want to just pick the last one? Like, and all I'm doing is like moving like a centimeter, like is this centered, like this thing in the middle, like, mm-hmm. You're scooting things, like barely moving them over. And I don't know. I feel like I was like one step away from being certifiable.
from losing it.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't think I listen to my friend's records and say like, oh, that vocal is 1 dB, like too high. Like it just drives me nuts. Like it's really just getting crazy about my own stuff. And I guess everyone kind of suffers with that. And maybe that's the benefit of not doing it all yourself. Like maybe it's good to have someone else be like, no, this is how it goes. Like you're crazy, get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
That's definitely a risk when you go into, you know, a professional studio. You do trust them because they, you know, that they have the experience and the equipment and everything, but then you never know what's in their head as far as what sounds good to them when you're giving them your music and paying them to do it.
Right.
It's like, I know what I want to sound like. I know what I want to hear out of the speakers when I'm driving down the road and listening to my music. Do they hear the same thing that I do?
Right.
And that's tricky, but that is a good, I think that is a benefit of doing it yourself.
It can go pros and cons either way, but I had one professional studio situation not work out perfectly because the guy really wanted like a pop hook on everything. He wanted to change the vocal delivery like everything to be like real sugary, and
it's got this
like, I don't know, like I get what you're saying. Yeah, like that's cool, but like that is not what I want to. Like they don't understand. Like why does he want to sound all like bad, like or whatever? You know, to them they hear like kind of a punk influence, like folk thing. It doesn't make sense. But you know, it was like I had a hookup, a good deal at the studio. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you're right. If the person that really has the say is not on the same page, you just gotta walk away from that.
Yeah, it's tricky, and you gotta test some water. And I think. I mean, I've listened to your music and I think it's great, and it definitely gives off the sound that you're saying that you want and that you describe. And so I would say it's definitely successful as, you know, being your own music producer or whatever. And I think that goes a long ways.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And you know, it's like the one thing I did have done professionally this time around was not on the stuff that's out now, but on the album, is have it professionally mastered. And I do think that makes a huge difference. The other ones I was doing mastering, like, I mean, they were mastered, but in a very much more like sort of basic way that I could figure out. But mm-hmm. But yeah, having someone that does mastering for like, you know, bigger releases and stuff too, it's not that crazy expensive to have someone else take it and just like kind of put that finishing touch on it. Like, so like the last person that messes with it isn't me. It like give me some peace of mind. Also, it just mm-hmm. evens everything out so much more. So I don't know. I guess maybe my suggestion, if anyone else out there is like, you know, getting by doing it themselves, it's like at least have like someone kind of cool master it, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a great idea, because it's not that expensive to have someone master your song, and it will have, I think, just a little better quality than maybe something you can do.
Yeah, or like the even like the auto mastering websites like Landar and stuff like that I've messed with, and it's cool that it exists, and it's certainly acceptable to like raise the levels, but like the things that like an actual engineer can do are just so worth it, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And that it definitely goes a long ways. Like you said, with peace of mind, like it's nice to just have someone go in there that knows what they're doing. Cause I think that a lot of people, especially like myself, I go and buy some cheap equipment and I think that I can do everything by myself. And then it's discouraging because I'm not getting the quality I want. You know, I don't know how to set up mics the right way. And, you know, there's so many things that go into it that a lot of people at first think that they can manage, and then they find out that, it, you know, there's a science behind it. And,
for sure.
And I think you with your experience that you're able to get, that probably came in handy for what you're doing now.
Yeah, it all kind of adds up, and you learn every time you do a big project, you know, you learn more. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and I think every time you hire someone else to like help you or go into a studio, you kind of learn from them too. So there's not like one right way to do it, but it definitely helps to sort of like pick up a few things. I mean, you can't like just YouTube tutorial, like everything start to finish. Like, how do I start a band, make a record, release it, promote it, tour? Like, I mean, you know, at some point there's gotta be more to it.
Yeah. And I think you gotta, you know, make a checklist, your weaknesses and strengths, mm-hmm. you know, see where you lack and maybe hire someone out for that, you know, different things. I did construction for a long time, and it's like, I don't want to do concrete, so I'm going to hire someone to do it.
That makes sense.
Even if you know how to do it, it's like, I'm not good at it, so.
Well, and your time is money, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
If you're going to do it right, it's going to take you a little while to figure out how to do something the right way. So, I mean, if you have all the time in the world to spend on something to learn how to, you know, finesse a skill really quickly with a lot of time,
Yeah.
I mean, go for it. But sometimes it's just easier to have someone else. And then it also helps build your network too, I think, to like collaborate with other artists or producers and just broaden your network as well.
That's true. It's good to have some sort of team involved. I mean, those are people who care about what you're working on if they're involved with it too. I think also the art, I was trying for a while to do a lot of my own like t-shirt designs and stuff. They come out all right, mm-hmm. but like in this record, I started working with artists like to actually you know, as far as the graphics goes. And it's like, why over like, you know, this reasonable amount of money do I like, can I get this awesome art? And I was just gonna like mess with it myself. Like, that's crazy. Like the amount of the quality I can get from a real artist is just so worth it. So I don't know. I guess I'm learning where to stop being DIY and where to continue.
Yeah. Good advice.
It probably goes with how busy you are too. Just how much you can handle at a time and still move forward.
Yeah.
That's tricky.
Right. Cause you would probably rather be out playing and making more money
than designing on a tour
than designing t-shirts. Exactly.
No,
which is pretty fun.
I think so too. And especially booking is takes so much time. I do a lot of it, but I'm even considering talking to different booking agents and stuff. So you could just go down the line with all of it. It's like good to know all of it. So you're sort of like, no one can ever stop you from moving forward because you can get it done if you have to. But
and it's good to know that the person you're hiring is doing it right, because so many people get conned into things that, you know, they think, oh, because they're a certified booking agent or producer or whatever, they're doing it how it's supposed to be done, but really they're not, and they're taking advantage of you. So it's good to know that you're getting the best for your buck and that, you know, they're doing it correctly and not trying to empty your wallet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Cool. Good. Well, we'll wrap things up here, but if there's any like final advice that you would give the listeners that are just really wanting to get more into the music scene, any final words of wisdom?
Yeah, I would just say you don't have to wait. You know, if you want to play music, you get out of your own head and just start playing music. There's a lot of other people out there who I'm sure would join a band with you. There's all kinds of places to do that sort of thing. Like, there's never the perfect time to get into any sort of art project, that the stars never really just align in that like sort of fantasy way. You have to just go out and make mistakes and play horrible shows and eventually play mediocre shows, and things always continue to improve if you just don't walk away. I think that's sort of my whole thing. I've definitely walked away from a lot of projects and got into my own head so many times. And I think the best way is just to like plow through it. So I don't know.
That's good advice. If you mess up bad, you can always just change your stage name, right?
Right. I think you just have to
get a new haircut, grow some facial hair, and call yourself something different.
I have bad shows still, and no one cares any more than you do.
Yeah.
You go around, you talk about it on stage, and tell everyone about it, then maybe they'll know then. But usually people remember the really awesome shows and they completely forget the terrible shows. And there's just nothing to be afraid of. You have to just like not worry about that sort of stuff, you know?
Yeah, just go for it.
Yep.
Yeah, that's good. Well, Bradley, thanks for being on the show again. And where can people go to find your music and more about you?
Yeah, the easiest way to find me is just my name at .com. BradleyPalermo.com has my links to like all the other sites and such. I'll have my record volume 1 out, I think, in April 19th, I think.
Awesome.
So keep a lookout for that. And And yeah, I appreciate you guys having me on. Again, I'm glad the audio worked out a little bit better this time, but it was good to talk to you twice.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been fun to get to know you. And we'll definitely look forward to having you on the show again once your album's out or whenever you want to be on it. So let us know.
Let's do it again sometime.
Yeah.
Well, good luck with everything.
Yeah.
I appreciate it, guys. Have a good night.
All right, you too. Refuse to
live that way again. I've done the 9 to 6, pulling out my hair, carving up.